Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, and welcome to Two Fat Expats. This podcast is the podcast where I get to announce that we have a new sponsor. We are now sponsored by the beautiful Shangri-La Dubai. Oh, and you're going to hear me talk about the Shangri-La Dubai quite a bit over the next couple of weeks, but I'll get on to that a little bit further into the show. So, back to the beginning. Kirsty Rice, welcome to Do Fat Expats. And why are we fat? Because we want you to live a fat expat life. And this podcast is all about filling your expat life up to the brim with fat ideas. Today, we're going to talk about adult TCKs or third culture adults. Ever wondered what happens to those third culture kids of yours when they grow up? Do third culture adults feel the need to plant roots, or have their third culture lives set them up for a nomadic life? We asked all of our third culture adults to phone in via our website, and we were slammed with responses, and they are brilliant. I can't wait to share them with you. But just before we get started, I'm going to ask the lovely Nikki Moffat to come and join us from Hamburg, Germany. I'm back in Doha, slightly jet-lagged and feeling like a half-wrung wet towel, but I do digress. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? And did I hear you say Shangri-La Dubai?
I did say Shangri-La Dubai, and I will be saying Shangri-La Dubai quite a few times, Nikki, in the next couple of weeks, because we're going to the Shangri-La Dubai.
Oh, I can feel it already, the heat, the heat.
A little bit cool down there in Hamburg?
A little bit cool. I just, I'm sitting at my dining room table in velour tracksuit pants, gifted to me by my late gorgeous grandmother, and I'm wearing a long cardigan and a grey shawl. I'm really looking, and apparently two pairs of glasses, reading glasses, one on my head and one on my eyes. I don't think I'm ready for a live podcast.
Now, we are going to the Shangri-La Dubai because that is the home of our first live Big Fat Expat meetup in the Middle East. Are you a bit nervous, Nikki? I have to say I am a little bit nervous.
I am, yes. There's a term for it, and it's called shitting myself.
So this Big Fat Expat meetup, and if you don't have your tickets yet, please, please hop on the Two Fat Expats website. You'll see an events page there, and the tickets are available on the events page. But we're hoping we've got two different events. We've got a Saturday night event with about, we're hoping for 50 women, where we'll be telling our expat stories and having the first ever, because I've never heard of this before, Nikki, in the expat world, but we're going to have one of those storytelling nights where we're going to share our moving stories. That doesn't mean it's not compulsory. You don't have to stand up, but if you'd like to stand up, we'd love to hear from you.
You can sit in the back and drink. Yes. That's fine.
And then
you can be a heckler. I will. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to heckle anyone. I'm kidding.
And then on the Sunday, we're going to have a coffee morning, which is going to be more of like a catch-up event. And I will do a reading.
Special piece yet unwritten.
Yes, a special piece that's definitely unwritten, yet to be written, but will be written.
And be world first revealed at the Shangri-La Dubai.
Oh, the beautiful Shangri-La Dubai. I cannot wait. Okay, Nikki, what are we talking about this week?
Okay, so we are talking about third culture kids, as you did mention briefly, and when they're adults. So there's a lot of research on this, but we're all parents and we all have kids and all our kids are different. So we thought the best way to find out about what's going to happen to third culture kids when they become adults is to ask actual third culture kids who are now adults.
Do you know who actually termed the phrase third culture kid? Because I know for me, I've been an expat now for 17, 18 years, and it definitely wasn't talked about a lot when I was first an expat, but now it's a really, well, or maybe it's just I've been an expat for so long, but I mean, it really is a phrase that's commonly used, and to the point that when I went back to Australia and we were looking at schools for our kids in Australia, and we introduced our kids to the principal of the school and we said, oh, you know, we live in Qatar, we've been travelling, she said, oh, so we've got ourselves a couple of third culture kids here. When did you first hear about it, and do you know, like, its history at all?
I can't remember when I first heard the term, but I guess I did hear it when we lived in Hong Kong and I had some kids, and they referred to it as that. The innovators, and I think in the research on this, were David Pollack and Ruth Van Rieken. And Ruth Van Rieken is the co-founder of the Families in Global Transition Conference and Movement, which was recently in the Netherlands, and herself an adult third culture kid, and a contributor today to our podcast.
Wow, that's fantastic. Very exciting.
David Pollack and Ruth Van Rieken wrote a book, I think more than one book. Anyway, and in it they talked about there's four basic cultural types. One is a foreigner, so you look different and think different. One is adopted, so you look different and think alike. One is a mirror, so you look alike and think alike. And the fourth one is a hidden immigrant, so you look alike but you think differently. And that's where the adult TCKs fall into.
So someone like my Lizzie, who's gone back to Australia, she would be classed as a hidden immigrant, right? Because she, or actually no, because this is the thing. I guess when she first got back, she didn't sound Australian. And yeah, there is no such thing as looking Australian because you can look anything. But I guess for her, yeah, when she would have got back, she would have been considered Australian because she had Australian parents, but she'd never lived in Australia and she was 16.
That's right. So she is kind of perfect for looking at and how people look and feel about this. So have you talked or had any conversations with her about how does she feel different at all? Or
yeah, I think she feels different in that in the environment she's in right now, there are international kids, but they are truly what she calls them real international kids, as in she's a fake one, but they're the real deal in that they are from Hong Kong or from Singapore or from Malaysia and they, you know, have come to Australia for school. Whereas then in her group of sort of 30 kids in her year, or sorry, there's about 20 in the year, there's actually four of them that are all like her and they are expat kids. So she has a girlfriend who's from Hong Kong, whose parents are Australian, a girlfriend from Singapore, and two girlfriends from Singapore whose parents are Australian. So she's not unusual or unique or exotic in any way in that regard. I think, and this is a whole different conversation, I think my guys really play down the third culture kid thing because I think for them, they look at kids who maybe have two parents who are different nationalities, who have hopped around all over the place, and they look at them and go, wow, that's really third culture kid. Whereas I guess for them, they both have Australian parents, they both have Australian grandparents, they have a home in Australia, they go back to Australia every year, they know their deal in Australia. Do you know, they know, they understand the pop culture, they watch The Project. my son has watched the entire series of 800 Words without us on his laptop. He loves it. Do you know, like, I think, and I'm referring, I should say, to a popular Australian show, but I don't think they see their situation as severe, but I also think it will come later. I mean, she still has all of those funny conversations where at the end of last year, one of her fellow boarders, who's a country girl and a classic country girl, kept all year referring about American things to Lizzie and asking Lizzie American questions. And we did live in America for a short period of time, for a year. We were in North America for 4 years. But finally, one day, At the end of the year, and Lizzie had shared a room with this girl. At the end of the year, Lizzie said, "Why do you always like kind of look at me for these American things?" And she said, "Well, you're from Utah, right?" And Lizzie goes, "I'm from Qatar."
Oh, that's so American.
So I guess Lizzie would have arrived with a slight, American accent.
Yeah.
And because she's been to an American school. So I think she has those things. But then at the same time, I mean, now she just sounds so Australian and her life is so Australian. But, yes, yeah, so I don't know. I think they probably play it down more now, but they will talk about it more as they get older because it'll make more sense.
And you were saying that your husband grew up as a TCK but doesn't really consider himself one.
He doesn't. And I wonder, is that it too? Is it that mirroring that they've seen from their father in that, he was an expat child, but he was back in Australia by the time he was 10. But he travelled all over and has really strong childhood memories of being an expat kid, and his parents identified it as expats their entire life. Like, they always referred to their expat stories and kept those relationships and, still in their 70s were still talking about their expat adventures. And interestingly, both of my husband's siblings are both very well travelled. One is currently an expat in Hong Kong, and the other one I don't think could have chosen a more travelling career had she tried, because she worked for the Prime Minister, and so she was always travelling around. But yeah, he really plays it down, because I asked him if he wanted to contribute with this podcast, because I was asking him questions, as you were sending me the interviews and the snippets. I said to him, "Well, do you find it hard to plant roots, because he now is an adult expat?" And he goes, "Oh no, I don't think so. I think I just, I think I could if I had to. I just chose not to." I guess he's not having that conversation with himself. He's not entering. I could never imagine him using the phrase, "I'm a third culture adult." But is that an Australian thing too? Like, do we?
It might be, but I was listening to you talking about your kids, and I mean, my kids have much less exposure to Australian culture. We don't go, every summer. We don't have a home there. We, they travel less there, I think, maybe than your kids. And so for them, it's just about like a holiday and seeing some family members. And I don't think they have as much access to pop culture and things that they should have to sort of ground themselves in feeling that way. But anyway, it's something, it's on my list.
Oh, did look, I don't want to go back to your question, but I think this is a really good point, Nikki, because I think this is the stuff that haunts us in the back of our minds, right? Yeah. I have just spent spring break where we have gone home and had the most mundane spring break you could ever imagine, but crazy busy in the administration of our Australian lives, in that we've sold a house, I've had to talk to packers and movers and sell furniture and, all amongst all this stuff. And the whole time all of that was happening, where it was all about building our Australian life and hanging out with our Australian friends and going to our Australian football games and all that sort of stuff, in my Facebook feed, what kept popping up was not only everybody's amazing spring breaks where they were travelling all over the world, but were my former spring breaks, because, that whole Facebook memories things comes up. And so I kept seeing, oh, there's us in London 4 years ago, and there's us in Paris, 3 years ago, and there's us in Sri Lanka 5 years ago or whatever. And I kept being quite haunted by, what are you doing, you idiot? You've got this amazing expat life. Why haven't you just taken the children and taken them away for a week on a great holiday. You know, why aren't you in Jordan? Why haven't you been to Oman yet? Like, why are you doing all this? So I think while some people might look at my life and go, oh, you know, we should be doing more to get our children grounded and, you know, get that pop culture in or whatever, the flip side's always going to be the people that are doing that are always looking, thinking, are we wasting our time? You know, we'll be home forever one day. What are we doing? I think this is the stuff that really, you know, like I said, haunts us.
Yeah, well, we don't know whether we're making the right decisions at the right time.
Yeah.
You can only...
Yeah.
I remember when my son was born and my father and I were having a conversation about him being christened, and I said, being all bolshy and, you know, young parent, I was like, I'm not going to have him christened. You know, that's a decision he can make for himself, you know, when he's old enough about, you know, whether he wants to be in the church and which church. And my dad said to me, Nikki, you're going to be making decisions for these children their whole lives, he said. Telling a baby that they can make their own decisions is just ridiculous. And, of course, at the time, and, you know, just last night I had a conversation with my children about all the things I tell you when I was younger, my parents told me things, I never believed them, and now I can see they're true. So I'm going to tell you this and you're not going to believe me.
Now, you were going to ask me before, had I read a book? What were you going to say?
Oh, it was Nikki Gemmell's book about why I'm raising my kids to be Australian. It's
not
called that.
And I need to read that. And I want to talk about Nikki later on in this podcast, but I haven't read the book and I'm going to read that book. So our adult third culture kids, Nikki. So I'm kind of running blind. I feel like I'm one of the listeners on this part because I think what's going to happen, because you and I couldn't quite work out how to do this, is that whether we would play the whole block of third culture kids or adult experiences at once or whatever. And you were saying you thought maybe it might be better to do two or three and then you and I have a chat. So we're sorry in advance if this comes across as very amateurish because we've not.
Oh, because that's not like the rest of everything that we do. That's fine.
But I'd love to hear them. And I guess, Nikki, I'm just going to have to be guided by you of what, because what I'm going to do is play them as we go at my end and have a listen and we'll discuss.
Okay. So I've uploaded them all into our Slack channel. Yeah. And if you just go, and the top two should be Nicole and Paru. So if you just listen to Nicole and Paru, and our listeners will be able to hear them at the same time as you after the magic of world of editing.
My name is Nicole. I'm 38 years old. I grew up in Spain, but both my parents are foreign. My mom is English and my dad is from the Philippines. When people find out that my dad is from the Philippines, they always tell me, you don't look Asian. And this is because my dad is Caucasian. He is from a colonial family. He grew up in a colonial environment in the Philippines because the Philippines was a Spanish colony back until 1898. So my dad does have some Spanish blood, but he didn't grow up in Spain or study or anything. I do feel very much like a third culture kid. Many times people ask me, do you feel English or Spanish or Filipino? I don't feel any of the three, really. I feel, I guess, both or the three of them. Now I'm married to a Greek man, and I have a son, so he's another mongrel like me. Sometimes I feel very uprooted because now we live in Germany, and I feel kind of sad that I'm doing the same thing to my own kid. But, you know, there are also some advantages to all this, I guess. Anyway, I just thought that you might want to hear my story, so here it is.
Okay, I know I'm meant to listen to Paru now, but I just have to say Nicole's amazing. How good are people at leaving messages? I mean, that was... And the expression about being a mongrel and that she then raised mongrels. Okay, I'm going to listen to Paru now.
Hi, this is Paru living in Hamburg, Germany. I was born in the UK. I moved to British parents. I moved to France when I was 7. I moved back to the UK when I was 14. Went to university, met my husband who's also British. We moved to Germany together. We had a son who was born there. Then we moved to the US. We had two girls born out there. And now we're back in Germany. I learned French at school. My parents didn't speak any French, so I was sent to a French school. I was completely immersed in the French school system, the French culture. That's where I learnt my French. I actually speak French without a French accent. People often assume I'm French when I speak French if they don't know me, which is kind of nice. I like to have different identities because obviously I'm British and I have my British accent when I speak English. I had never heard of the term TCK, let alone ATCK. I only discovered it when we were making the move from the US to Germany, and I was trying to find as much help as possible to support my children from moving from one country to the next, and discovered this whole world out there online that I didn't know existed. So I see my life as a TCK through my kids, which is quite funny because, like me, they're confused about their identity in terms of, are they French? Are they English? They've never lived in either country, yet have this strong attachment to both language and cultures. They go to a French school here, so they're completely immersed in the French language. All their friends are French, but most of our family live in the UK, so we often go back, grandparents, cousins, aunties and uncles, so they have a strong attachment to that too. And I was exactly the same as a child. I felt very much French when I lived in France, but then when I visited back in the UK, I felt at home and I felt British. So I guess that's a benefit. When we have these discussions, we talk about being citizens of the world, that we belong where our, as the old saying goes, home is where your heart is, and that's where they belong. And I find it nice. I find it nice, and hopefully, like me, they'll grow up and they'll want to discover the world and won't be afraid from moving from country to country.
Okay. Oh, my God. There's so much that I want to... And I haven't made any notes, so I'm just going to say it all off the cuff. I think it must be amazing to have been an expat child, to then have expat children, to then witness them having those same questions that you had as a child. And
I know, yeah, right?
And I think that whole identity thing, and this is where I just don't think, you know, once again, and no surprises, you can't lump all of everybody's expat situations in together, because I was thinking, if you're an expat in France, and I think Peru was saying about she went back to the UK and she felt British, she goes back to France and she feels French. Whereas I think if my kids come back to Qatar, they don't feel Qatari.
Yeah, it's totally about where you have your experience.
Yes, yes. And, yeah, I thought that they were both phenomenal messages to leave and experience, and both spoke so well. Okay, so am I meant to listen to...
Yes, now you're going to listen to Lucille and then Amel.
Okay, here we go.
And if you need to quickly talk in between, that's fine.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm going to listen to Lucille.
My name's Lucille, and I'm a sometime ATCK. These terms are so confusing, it's hard to keep track. But I guess depending on which country I'm living in, I'm an ATCK, but I have three nationalities. So at the moment, living in the Netherlands, because I hold the passport, I'm not technically living outside of my passport country, even though I don't speak Dutch and I don't feel Dutch. Anyway, I was born in England to a South African mother and a Dutch father, and moved to South Africa when I was a teenager. I guess my grandmother was a TCK. She was born in Indonesia and lived for many years there as a child before moving back to the Netherlands. But as an adult, she went back to Indonesia, where she was in a camp during the war. And then she moved to England and to South Africa, and then back to Holland in her old age. My father was born in the Netherlands, but moved to South Africa as a child. And my kids are now also part-time TCKs, because they also have three nationalities. So technically at the moment, because they have Dutch passports and were living in Holland, they're not technically TCKs, but they feel completely South African in terms of their culture and their identity, but they don't have South African passports. Or in fact, one does and one doesn't. We don't feel like we're Dutch, and so I call them TCKs. But anyway, in my case, leaving England and moving to South Africa when I was young really set the ball in motion with this whole feeling of being displaced and not knowing where I fit in. I always thought when I lived in South Africa that I wanted to move back to England. But as an adult, moving around the world, we're now in our sixth country, I realized that the UK is not my home. Even though I was born there and raised there and I have a British passport, it's not where I feel connected to. But I also don't feel connected to South Africa that much. And again, that's another country where I have a passport to. So I don't know. I guess I'm still looking for where I fit in and where I'm going to call home one day. That's the thing. We move around every couple of years or every 3 to 4 years. So basically, that's me, very confused, very without a home, and about to have my third baby in the third country. So I don't know where this new little one's going to belong either. Maybe he'll just be Dutch and that's it.
Okay, I've got to talk in between Lucille and Mel. Oh my gosh, Lucille. And the whole I don't know where home is yet.
Yes, that's the thing, that she's hopeful, I guess, yeah, that she thinks that she'll find where her home is going to be. But crazy, right? And the fact that she says, oh, they're not technically TCKs, but they kind of are anyway.
Do we make too much of home? Do we think that home is meant to have this amazing feeling? And is it just impossible? Do you know, because I think coming from a country town where my father was born and my grandfather was born, do you know, that to me is fairly deep roots, where we lived. We lived on the one street and whatever. But that isn't, while I call it home, that I return there, it is no longer home for me either. It doesn't feel like home. Do you know, I know that I can't live there again forever, sort of thing, because too much has happened and too much has gone, and that I think, you know, once you travel from place to place, you almost get home robbed from you in a certain way. But I don't know, do we all expect to have this incredible feeling that maybe doesn't exist?
I think that's probably true, because if we live in a country and we never leave it, we don't obsess about home and where it is. You know, we talk about that's where we live. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's hard to say, but I think it's part of the identity that we have, that we take on being someone, whatever label we're going to give ourselves. The new label for TCK is actually cross-culture kids as opposed to third culture kids, because there's often more than three cultures involved. So I don't know. I don't know. It's very interesting, but you're going to find out some more interesting stuff when you listen to Amel.
Okay, I'm going over to listen to Amel.
This is Amel from Tandem Nomads. I'm really happy to share with you my TCK story. It's kind of long, like a lot of us anyways, but if I want to highlight one aspect, was the fact that when I was a child, it wasn't so much a problem for me to be a TCK. For me, I was just a kid like any other kid, and I did have some issues, obviously, to adapt to schools, bullying, things like that, but I do not think that these are problems only related to being a TCK. All kids go through those issues, but one thing that I think is specific to TCKs is the skill that we develop to see other people's perspectives. And this is, I think, for me, a wonderful skill that we gain as a TCK that gives us a lot of extra skills to be prepared for our adult lives and be able to adapt to change and transition much easier than the adults who did not. However, one thing that I struggle with, and I'm starting to find my answers, but for a while when I decided to get married and started projecting myself as a mom, I know that I was starting to wonder where my values, as I've always been adapting, not necessarily my values, but adapting, some of my perspectives of life according to who I was with in order to adapt to others. And once I became an adult, I was like, okay, so what do I stand for? You know, so it's at the end of the day, I do believe that the ultimate values are the human values that we should all have of caring for each other. But when it comes to living in a society with other people, you know, respecting certain customs, how you greet each other, for example, how you perceive certain answers positively or negatively, depending on who you're talking to, all these things can be quite challenging, I think, even as an adult once we grow, because we keep adapting to everybody. But so what are our social cues to make others adapt to us and to our messages? So that was interesting, because I realized that I do send send mixed signals probably to people because I use signals from different cultures and different backgrounds. I think that the real challenge is not as much as being a TCK, but growing up as an adult and fitting to the real world and building our own limits and our non-negotiables when we become an adult. We've spent all our lives adapting to others. At some point, we also want others to adapt to us. So it's very interesting to see how we get to that point to learn how to make others respect our own point of views. And in order to do that, we have to develop them. And I think that's the real challenge when we're growing up as a TCK and becoming an adult. And as I said, that was more of a challenge when I got married, because then suddenly we're adding an extra piece to our identity. And if we become a mother, then it must be even more so. But I hope this was helpful, and I'm looking forward to listening to this episode.
Wow, I just listened to Amel, and her voice is so soft and gentle when she said about being bullied as a child. It was like, oh my God, that's like shooting Bambi. How could anyone be nasty to such a voice? Oh, the mixed messages and the different parenting styles and that's complicated. Do you know, that's really...
It is. And she was a TCK, like, who lived her whole life that way and then got married. So she didn't ever sort of return somewhere. She was still going. So as she said, she had to then take on a whole other another thing. And her husband is another nationality as well.
Yes. Yeah. And, I mean, you and I, Nikki, we've talked about this so many times that we feel lucky that our partner was from the same place, so it removed that extra process, you know, of having to negotiate. But while it's, you know, incredibly exotic and opens up the chance for travel and creates this very international family, it also creates a lot more, you know, administration for one thing, and flights, and, you know, it is really complicated.
Yes. Now, the next person you're going to listen to is a guy, which I think is exciting, because I tried to track down a few guys, because they kind of have a different point of view. And when you listen to him, well, first he's French. I'm going to tell you. So try to listen past the accent, but he just kind of presents a slightly different side of it. So have a listen.
I'm French. I was born in France and lived there for 6 years before we moved to China for a year and a half with my family. And then we moved directly from there to Canada in Toronto for 3 years before coming back to France for 12 years. And then I decided for my studies to move back abroad, to this time to the United States for 5 years. And now I'm living back in France with my wife, who is American. And so for my whole life, I've really valued having lived abroad when I was a young kid, mainly because for me, it really resonated with certain values of open-mindedness, of adaptability and resilience. And also it really helped me learn new cultures and especially have the advantage of having learned a new language. And so I was bilingual since I was 10 years old, which is a real advantage in this global world. But so I think for me, the fact that I've lived abroad and it has really resonated with me has made me choose, for example, to go back abroad for my studies, to not have just a French diploma, but also have a more international diploma, because I knew I wanted to live a life abroad. But I don't really see myself as living constantly abroad. I think we need to be slightly rooted. We don't just change place every 2 years or something like this. We have to be slightly rooted before moving abroad again. And maybe this is why I also decided to live my life with an American woman. And so I guess for me, there's a lot of positives with having lived abroad, but there's also some things that are a bit more difficult. For example, when I came back from the United States to France, I was defined as an American person. When I came back from Canada to France, I was also defined as a Canadian. So it seems like you're never quite from one area or the other. You're always a bit in between. Your identity is who's never quite French, never quite Canadian or American. You're always a bit in between. And even as a French person, I'm not really like a real French person. I think for me, what really helped me feel stabilized and really enjoy and not focus on the challenges of living abroad as a kid was maybe the timing of it, because I lived abroad when I was like 6 to 10 years old. So before my formative years and before the teenage years, which could be more difficult.
Oh, wow. I'm not a real French person. He sounds...
Well, he is. It's just the other people didn't think
he was. But you're right. It was a less emotional.
There's nothing wrong with being emotional, though.
But what do I want to say? Not parochial, but you're more... I don't know.
It's more direct. Yeah, I don't know. But it was just, he talked about the things that we always hope our ATCKs get, which is, you know, resilience. And he talked in terms of it being a good skill to have a second language. Like, he really spoke through specific skill sets as opposed to how he was feeling about it.
Less emotional, more strategic. Yes.
More strategic.
It has given me this, this, and this. Therefore, my life is like this, this, and this. And this is how it is. Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's probably how my husband sees things, you know, that it gave me this, and this is what it is. And the one thing I'm interested in, and we haven't made our way through all the interviews, because one of the things I think happens with third culture kids is they become very close with their siblings. But I haven't heard anyone else talk about their siblings or where their siblings ended up or if they ended up in the same place as their siblings.
Oh, I don't know how much we're going to get of that, but there is one person right at the end that I want you to listen to who is a very early 20s TCK who talks about the difference between her and her brother. Ooh. But right now we're just going to go and listen to Ingrid. Okay. Who's also in Paris.
All right.
I am Ingrid, expat with kids in Paris. And as you can hear, my accent is probably more British than American. I have decided to contact you because I am an adult TCK, half English, half British. Grew up in Switzerland. I was born in America, left New York when I was 2 years old to go and live in Switzerland, thinking that my parents thought we're going to stay there for 2 years and go back. Well, I spent my next 30 years in Switzerland, finally met my husband, got married to my husband, and then we started moving around. And it wasn't until much later on in my 30s that I actually found out that there was a definition to what I was, a third culture kid. It hit home very much when in my 20s I moved to Geneva from Zurich, where most of the kids were Swiss, but neither of their parents were Swiss. They all spoke 2 or 3 different languages, and it was the normal thing to do. So the first time in my life, I actually felt at home in this community. So from then on, back to when I started my own family, one kid born in Argentina, the next kid born in Milano. My husband's Italian, so with Croatian background, so my kids don't really worry about where they're from. My son thinks he's Argentinian, my daughter thinks she's Swiss, but depending again on the situation. So back to me. I would move again and again and again. I love it. Absolutely adore it. We moved around for 15 years, every 3 years more or less, and have been in Paris now for the last 6 years. So we had a double duty tour here, and it looks like we're staying on for at least another 3. So I do like being here, but I'd rather move on. I think it kind of puts everything back into question every time you move. It's like throwing all your balls up into the air and then having to catch them again, but you catch them a different way every time. And so I think it's very stimulating. And as a couple as well, I think it's much more stimulating to look forward rather than backwards. Nowadays, I'd say our kids, TCK kids, are more than third culture kids. They're fourth and fifth culture kids, but we definitely love it. It's not easy to leave, but it's very intriguing, stimulating, challenging to stop the other end. So.
Oh, my God, I love Ingrid. I just know that her and I would be really good friends. I love her. That whole looking forward is better than looking back and throwing the balls in the air.
The balls and catching them a different way. I was like, that is awesome.
That is so true.
I love that as
and
well.
I too would move again and again and again and again. Would you move again and again and again?
Yes, I denounce conversations about when you can go home. We've just said, is there such a thing as home? Yeah. But I always say, you know, we've got a passport. We can go anytime. You know, they're not going to take it away from us.
Yeah.
We're all paid out with our taxes. Yes. They can't take away our citizenship.
Okay.
That's how I feel about that. All right. Clara, listen to Clara.
Hello, Clara. I'm looking forward to listening to Clara. Okay, here we go.
Hi, this is Clara. I see you're looking for stories about adult TCKs this week. I definitely fall into that category. I was born overseas. I was born in Cuba, where my parents were diplomats, and basically we've been travelling and living overseas on and off ever since. I've lived in, I think, about 11 different countries, and also my home country of the UK, including as a child we lived in the Philippines and in Nigeria, and then later on in Venezuela and Gibraltar. And then as an adult, I also lived in New Zealand and Jamaica. And now with children of my own, we've lived in St. Lucia, Pakistan, and now in South Africa. So you could say that I'm definitely an ATCK with my own TCKs. I have to be honest, I'm finding it difficult to settle down in one place. I don't think I've ever lived anywhere for longer than 5 years. And I'm struggling at the moment because we're talking about going back to live in the UK. And I'm not quite sure when we'll be able to move abroad again, or if we will. So at the moment, my future's looking a little bit bleak. So I think all I can do is to plan lots of long holidays to go and visit all the people I know and have met as an expat all around the world. I simply can't imagine living in one place the rest of my life. As for my children, it'll be interesting to see what happens to them, because both of them have lived in 3 or 4 countries already, and they're only 9 and 11, so whether they continue to travel or not, I don't know. I suppose only time will tell, but all I can say is I hope they do give me somewhere to go and stay when they're older.
I love it with Clara that the idea of moving home, that her expression is the situation's looking a little bit bleak.
I'm with her, Clara. I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I always hear, I guess because I have a blog called 4 Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle, and people all the time who are searching for, I'm moving to Doha or I'm moving whatever, they'll send me messages from, you know, their home country saying, oh, we're thinking of moving, can you give me any tips or blah, blah, blah. And they're always laced with this fear, you know, this complete fear of leaving home and becoming expats. And I think it's hysterical that then the long-term expats have this complete fear of moving back home. Okay, who's next?
Well, there is people that are next, but I'm going to say something that's not on the script and we haven't talked about it yet. But we have talked about a lot about timing in our episodes. And I'm just having a look at the timing of this episode so far. And we've only listened to half of the people so far. So we have to make a decision. It's a decision point, Kirsty, decision time. We have to decide whether we're going to make this a two-part episode and maybe listen to some more recordings for our next episode, the rest of them, or because I think we really have to listen to them all because they're really all so good, or we push on now and we make it a longer episode, which I know...
No, do you know what, Nikki? I love the idea of a two-part episode for a couple of reasons. One is, yes, they're all fantastic. I've really enjoyed every single one, and I do. I want to hear them all. And I also think maybe if other people hear these and then they want to phone in with their stories, we can add them to it, and then we'll have a three-part episode. No, but also because we are going to be doing a podcast at the Shangri-La in Dubai.
The Shangri-La in Dubai
for our Big Fat Expat Meetup. Do you know, maybe we just do this. And I agree with you because what are we now? We're on 45 minutes already? Okay. All right. We are definitely going to stop and go on with our usual recommendations, and we'll continue on with the adult, the culture kids. Of course, unless we get any feedback from people that say, no, that's enough. We've had enough. If you've had enough, let us know.
If you've had enough of the adult third culture kids, do tell us, but I'm pretty sure you're all going to want some more because I just think it's so, so interesting.
Yeah, I agree. That's my view. Okay, Nikki, what have you been listening to? What have you been reading? What have you been watching? Do you want to kick off with podcasts?
Who hasn't been listening to S-Town? Come on.
So much to talk about with S-Town. Okay, you tell me first. You've obviously listened to it all.
Yes.
What was your initial feeling when you'd finished listening to it?
Well, I was torn because we've had the Richard Simmons discussions. I had been thinking about along those lines about, you know, is it intrusive? Is it not intrusive? How does this start? I also had concerns about mental health issues that I had before we even got to the bit where it branches off from where it started. Mm-hmm. I really loved it, and I loved the storytelling of it, and I'm going to talk about another podcast after this, which really is done by four writers, and they talk about the writing in it and how you don't realise when you're listening to it. I mean, you do, but you don't. Just the way it's written is just so clever and so beautiful, and the production of it is so beautiful. I really enjoyed it, but I felt very torn afterwards.
Yeah.
How about
you? Well, I think without ruining it or giving it for those who are going to listen to it, is that the podcast, it would be fair to say, without a spoiler, is that it starts in one way and then it takes this completely different trajectory. And you would have to question whether the pivotal character really wanted it to go that way and whether they had any choice or say or whatever over it. It was kind of like, well, bad luck. We're going to tell this story. That's kind of how I felt. I really felt at the end of it that the person was exploited. And I, you know, there were lots of discussions going on in my world about it, of how different people felt about
it.
So
many.
And, you know, there were people that were just like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. This is just the best thing ever. And I just kept thinking, oh, I just feel like the person has really been exploited. But what was interesting was then about a week after that, there was an article in The Guardian, and I'll put a link in for it, and they quoted John Ronson. And I've talked about John Ronson before. I went and saw him speak in the UK. He wrote a fantastic book about public shaming. He has done so many talks on public shaming. You can see them all on YouTube. But after episode two, John Ronson came out and said, "This is the best podcast I've ever heard." There's a tweet. So it's really interesting because in this article in The Guardian, they sort of say, oh, you know, John Ronson gave it the nod. He thinks it's fantastic. But I couldn't help but wonder whether John Ronson still felt the same way after it was all over. But they asked in this article, they asked Brian Reid, who was the producer of S-Town, did he feel that there were any ethical problems around reporting on what he reported on? I don't want to give too much away, right?
Because if you haven't listened to it, you need to.
Yes. And anyway, he sort of talked about it in a journalistic way, that journalists tell these same stories and that you're always kind of weighing out what to include and what's appropriate and what's the impact on the people involved versus the value to the story, and that you really have to apply your own moral compass and use the judgment of your editors. But I also thought what was interesting is his theory, because he's worked at This American Life, I think, for about 7 years.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, we're putting on a show. What's different about Shit Town is that in terms of technique, we turn them into novels. We sense that the details and the metaphors that the person that they base the whole thing around, his name is John. The metaphors that John was handing me, the maze, the clockwork, they were also novelistic. And with a novel, people will open the first page, engage with a character, and you don't know what's going on for the first 50 pages. We thought we could do that with a podcast, and they certainly did. They did. And you're right, Nikki, it was beautiful storytelling in how they did weave that in with the clockwork. Where I just felt it crossed a line was he told stories that John hadn't told him, and he chose to share those stories. And I don't know, it's fascinating, isn't it? But brilliant.
It is. There are so many people with so many opinions about it, because there's a whole group of people that felt absolutely robbed because they thought it was going to be a true crime podcast. Yes. Because it was from they sort of launched it off the Serial platform, so they thought it was going to be along those yes. lines. And so there were people that were like howling in the streets about
my children.
That's why it was
my
wrong.
Children, yes, because it started on a trajectory where my children were really into it. I only let my bigger children listen to it, but my second daughter in particular, her and I listened to it on a car ride, and she just wanted to know, because you kind of get led towards this story of, is there treasure that's been...
treasure. Actually, that...
You never find out about the treasure because we go off on this whole different tangent. And she felt robbed about that because she kept wanting to know, but is there treasure? Because I guess as a child...
I thought the release was kind of interesting because he's worked on it for 3 years, over 3 years... And so it's a long-term story, mm. right? And it started off one way and ended up another way. And the writing and the character, the way they built the characters and everything. But I loved how clever it was that it got you to like people and then it turned around and said, but they could be bad people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just thought that was very clever the way they did that. They built the characters and then kind of didn't tear them down. But there is pending legal action going on that hasn't been resolved. And I thought it was so strange that they would just like wrap it up and just send it out into the world
yes.
without those things. Did you
yes,
think that?
Yes, I did. I thought there was so much about it because these are people's lives. These people are still alive.
Yeah.
yeah. Now, you were going to go back and tell me about a podcast that you're listening to that's yeah. talking about it. What's that?
So that podcast is called Crime Writers On, is the name of the podcast. And there are four people. One is a married – there's four hosts, which I just think is amazing because there's two of us and we talk over the top of each other. But this lady, Rebecca Lavoie, she runs this whole thing. She guides these four people in this podcast and she's so good at it. I really enjoy listening to that side of things. So she and her husband do it and they're both crime writers. So they're actual writers and they've both written sort of crime mm-hmm. novels. And then there's two other people who are also published authors and one's an ex-detective. And so they really started... They started this podcast when Serial started, mm-hmm. I think. And so it's a podcast about podcasts, you know, but it goes down this track. So they've done some really good episodes on S-Town and they did some good episodes about Richard Simmons. And then they also talk about documentaries and things on Netflix and whatever. So it's, I've really enjoyed it. I didn't listen to all the true crime ones they did, although, you know, I do like a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't like them as much. I found this. There's a fanatical group of true crime podcast followers.
I tell you, they're huge.
I don't class myself in that group. But I think these are really clever people with really good take on things. And I really think you should listen to the Richard Simmons ones and the S-Town okay. ones, the episodes. I don't know you'd love all the episodes. I haven't listened to any others, but those ones I've really enjoyed and I think they're worth listening to.
I'll definitely have a listen to that this week. Okay, so I am loving Nancy. And Nancy is... best friends, Kathy and Tobin, who are both gay, and they describe the podcast as telling provocative stories and having frank conversations about the LGBTQ experience today. It's brand new. It's just come out in, pardon the pun, in the past few days. and it's just brilliant podcasting, really, really good stories, really heartfelt. But the thing that really struck me when I was listening to it yesterday is you just feel like you're right there in the middle of someone's conversation. It kind of makes you think about coming out and whether it's an announcement or a conversation. And that's a phrase that Kathy uses when she talks about talking to her mother, is she realised, because it went so badly the first time because her mother just basically shut the conversation or shut it down. You know, I'm gay. No, you're not. This is how it is. and then you get walked through the conversation. The second conversation is Tobin and his father, and it's just brilliant because The father talks about how he started watching Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and how much he just loved it, while the son found it really cringeworthy. And they talk about, the father talks about going for the, when he and his wife went out for dinner with the son when he brought his first boyfriend along with him, and how he thought they were so badly dressed, and how he talked about it the way home because he said to his wife, you know, I can't remember the phrase, but he didn't like that they both had double denim. And it's really, it's really good. But then at the same stage, there's this moment where he talks about crying in the car on the way to work, and not because he was sad his son was gay, but because he was thinking about how it was going to impact his life. And you kind of find out that his best friend died of AIDS. The dad's a doctor. And, you know, just as a parent, you know, those sorts of worries. Yeah. It just, look, it's I think it's really well done, and definitely, and of course the whole Nancy is all about reclaiming the word, you know, because, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good. What about you?
I'm excited.
TV-wise, what have you been doing?
TV. I had a little bit of a TV week. I watched Harlots, which I think is new on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix, but it's a weekly one, so they don't dump the whole thing at once. It's very annoying.
That's very annoying.
You can't binge watch it. It's a tale of two madams in 18th century England.
Who watches TV once a week these days?
No one. You have to wait for days and days and for all your shows to build up, then watch it. So I'm quite enjoying that. I've only watched two episodes because there's only two episodes
out. And it's 18th century.
But I think I'll keep going.
Buddy Brown, dirty, oh God.
Yes. Okay. And so there's one, it's quite fun, good, because there's one high class set of ladies and there's one lower class set of ladies.
So it's down to
very interesting to see that. Yes. Yes, Downton Abbey for prostitutes. That's
ooh,
it.
And
season 3 of Grace and Frankie is out, and it's over. I've done it. I've watched it all.
Oh.
I love that show.
I've only done series 1 of Grace and Frankie.
Oh, it's a really – and actually I watched it, and then I read an article about it, which I'll put in, which says it's – could be the best season yet. And then I went, and then I read the article and I thought, God, I'm getting old because I'm reading this article about old people, a show about old people. But it's tackles some really good issues. And I mean, the actors and actresses in that show are just brilliant. I mean, they're just so talented, those
so
people.
We've got but Jane,
it talks about
Jane Fonda.
Yeah. Yeah, Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen, and
I never remember his name, but he was
No, I know, but he did lots of things. He was in Law and Order.
He was also in Newsroom, wasn't he?
Yes, he was in Newsroom as well. Yeah, yeah, it's very good. Anyway, so I just, and then I don't think it's giving away. It's not going to be a big spoiler, but they design a vibrator for older women who have arthritis, so have trouble with their wrists. So it's so clever because it follows this whole stream about how all marketing is geared towards youth and sex, and they have this whole, they go down this path and marketing, and it's very good. It's very clever.
Oh,
so I really
enjoy
it.
Okay, now I'm inspired. I can go back and watch season 2 and 3 all at once.
And 3.
That's really interesting that you're on the older theme. You and I have both been in the same similar world, except yours is funny and mine's sad, in that I watched, because I was in Australia last week, there was a lot of discussion in Australia about euthanasia and getting old, and then on Q&A, which is a public television show, I don't know if you've seen, Nikki, there's been this older couple and they've basically gone viral.
I watched it live. Yes.
They were so good. So the panel were all debating, because Q&A is a panel-style television show, and I'll put all the links in here because luckily all of these people put their shows on Facebook, so you can watch them wherever you are. But they had a panel discussion, and this is where everything ties in beautifully of our whole podcast, Nikki, is that on that panel was the lovely Nikki Gemmell, who's just written a book about her mother's suicide sort of slash personal euthanasia experience. The book's called After. I'll also throw in a link where she's I had a great interview in The Guardian sort of about that book. Or you can...
Do you know, just quickly, I went to primary school with Nikki Gemmell.
Oh, my gosh, I love
But I can't remember her. I don't know. I'm like, how did I not know another person called Nikki? And I can't remember her to save my life. And she was, I guess, 1 or 2 years above me. I've looked it up and everything. And I don't know who she is, and I'm gutted.
Wow. So, yeah, I guess we must have bought our house in Australia and moved to Qatar at about the same time that Nikki Gemmell repatriated back to Australia. And so my Saturday routine was coffee, newspaper, get the Australian magazine with her column in it and read it, because she wrote like an expat. Do you know, she had repatriated and she was intoxicated by the smell and the sound of Australia and having her children back in Australia. And, you know, you can imagine I devoured it, because she was writing all the stuff that I was experiencing at the time. So I think she's an amazing writer. But, of course, then I think it, I'm not sure exactly how long ago it was, but I do remember reading, she kind of alluded to that her mother had passed, and then a little bit further on, you kind of found out that, no, her mother had suicided and that she'd been in a lot of pain. And it's been really interesting sort of finding out more and more about the book writing process of this, in that there's a great interview, I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but she's on No Filter with Mia Friedman. It's a great interview if you don't want to read the article that we link to in The Guardian, but sort of explains how she wrote that book just really on the sly. She did a lot of research and went and talked to other people, and nobody knew that she was writing the book, which is called After, which is about her mother. But back to Q&A. So, of course, she was on the panel this week talking about euthanasia, but there was this beautiful couple in the audience where I think she's 89 and he's 91 or something, but they talk about when the time comes that they can no longer care for themselves, they want to go. They think either terminally ill or can no longer care, and they want to be gone. And you can tell that Nikki Gemmell is the one that's really listening, because she really gets it, do you know, because she's experienced it, whereas there's other people on the panel that want to tell them why they are a disservice to the community by ending their lives. And the reason these people have gone viral is this beautifully well-spoken 89-year-old woman just says, that's bullshit. She was great.
And then went on the project and said it several more times.
Yeah. So I guess on the back of that, that has been what's been on my mind, is from sort of listening to that podcast and reading the story and whatever. And then up popped in my Facebook feed yesterday the most brilliant piece from SBS. Nikki, you have to watch it.
Yes.
Oh, did you see it? It's just so powerful. So SBS, again, is another public television show, but it's, this story is just so brilliantly told. So it kind of begins by showing you the house of a little old lady and the neighbours talking about kind of vaguely knowing her and knowing that she was writing her memoirs and being surprised to find out that she'd been dead in the house for 6 months. And this woman had been basically on her kitchen floor for 6 months, and she writes so beautifully. They use someone else's voice to read her stories, but she's written about her memoirs being the last pleasure of a lonely life, and how she's contemplating if old age is a blessing, a curse, or purgatory. And she says, I'm a complete ignoramus of modern life, and I don't mind. I just everything when you hear the voice, sort of, you know, when you hear a voice behind her words, it's, I don't know, I just thought it was a really striking piece.
Yeah, it's very good storytelling as well.
So they say that 1.9 million Australians live alone, and that the number of old people dying alone at home is rising. And if that's the case in Australia, I'd say it's the case in a lot of the Western world. But the other part of that story is they then bring in sort of the forensic scientists, and because I had not thought about it, if this is sort of, because the forensic scientist says she feels that it's becoming an epidemic, and she also was saying she feels that the community thinks that this is something the police do, that they don't realise that forensic cleaners come in and do what they do. And she kind of, it's quite gruesome when she explains what happens to a body when it's left in a house like that. But, yeah, I highly recommend watching it because I think it's a really, really great piece. And I can't remember how long it goes for, but I want to say maybe 10 minutes or so, but definitely worth the watch. And we'll have the link in the show notes. What about you? You've got something a little lighthearted to tell me, Nikki, after all that depression and doom and gloom of something funny that you've seen on social media?
Well, I feel like I'm all about the light, ridiculous stuff, and you're all about the serious social stuff. You're much more Chats 10 and I'm much more, I don't know what.
No, I think week I'm a bit dark.
So yeah. My week is social media. So when social media support groups go bad, so we're expats. We belong to lots of expat social media groups, and, you know, they can be so, so helpful, like, you go in there and you throw out a question and you can find loads of stuff. I saw an example this week of where that didn't quite work out. So it's a social media group I belong to. It's in a country I've lived in and it has a lot of people in it, maybe 20,000.
Good Lord.
Hi, is it
an expat kind of location or is it a bigger border?
It is an expat kind of location, but it has a mixed group of people. But this particular post was written by an expat.
Right.
And because I looked the person up just to check.
Research.
I wasn't stalking, I was researching. Hi, mums. We're looking for a therapist to work with our son who may be left-handed.
What?
Do you have any suggestions? TIA. Now, and then I was like, it was on the 2nd of April. So I was like, could be, you know, April Fool's. Or something.
Yeah, that's right.
So I kind of just looked at it. I went to the corner on the right and said, follow this post. You see? Didn't write following underneath it, just wrote follow this post because I thought this is going to go somewhere very quickly. And so I sat for about 5 minutes and then someone also was being very cautious as me and said, can you clarify what you mean by that? And someone said, oh, yes, hi, X person. Someone to work with us on how to write left-handed without the left hook and things to be aware of. I have no experience with left-handedness. Thanks for any advice you may have. Now, I have to say, I'm left-handed, right? So yeah. I'm already reading this going.
What are you telling me? What are you saying?
And so it kind of went downhill from there. And I turned off my notifications because I thought, okay, this is where I thought it was going. Left-handedness is not a disorder or abnormality requiring treatment or therapy. That was one response.
So all of a sudden left-handers have become a minority group that are discriminated against?
That's something like that. I'm left-handed and I never received any therapy for it. I also don't write with a hook. Is there really therapy for left-handers? Have I missed out? Anyway, it was just one of those situations where I think she probably went in with the best of intentions. I had a look. As I said, I did some research. Her son is quite young. So I thought, you know, she's just trying to be that on top of everything mother.
But basically what you're saying, Nikki, is her son is quite young and she doesn't realise what's going to hit her and exactly how many real problems she's going to have coming her way.
That's correct. I should have said to her, you can just be like my husband and just keep putting everything in their right hand like he did to my children. But I didn't say that. And, of course, I do have one left-handed child and one child that's right-handed. So we're a mixture in our house.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my social media for the week.
Oh, that's funny.
Your dad's a lefty, but your mom's not?
No.
And there's no lefties?
No, we don't have any lefties. Actually, to be honest, though, I probably haven't paid any attention. I possibly do have a lefty and I don't even know because that's the sort of parent I am. I'll double check.
Now, feedback from our listeners this week. I just want to say, Kirsty, we received several voice messages and even a couple of emails about the length of the podcast.
Oh, yes.
Which I forwarded to you with glee every time you received them.
I know, and I think one of my replies was, you must be loving this. Because, of course, for those who weren't listening, last week we discussed that I think an hour is enough for the podcast and that we don't want to bore the pants off everyone. And Nikki thinks that, of course, no, that it should just go as long as it needs to go. And that
not to eternity, not to eternity.
But, you know, there's no need to cut it short. And, yes, I did get all of the emails that you forwarded on to me and the messages where people said, no, don't cut it short. I'm fine for it to go more than an hour. And don't make it 30 minutes. Whatever you do, don't make it 30 minutes. So, yes. So I think we can always promise it will be an hour. I guess, too, as we're getting more and more interviews as well, and the feedback was that people do enjoy the recommendations. So we'll just keep going as we are until someone tells us to stop.
All right. That person won't be the Shangri-La Dubai.
No, thank you, Shangri-La Dubai. We love you, Shangri-La Dubai. We will say goodbye and we'll be back next week with part two of our TCKs All Grown Up.
We will. And just a quick reminder that if you do enjoy listening to this podcast, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes in the country that you listen to us in. We'd also love you to send us a message if you'd like. And if you're in Dubai, you can find, or Abu Dhabi, because it's close, I hear, I understand. You can find our event information on Off the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle page under events. And it's also been shared on the Two Fat Expats Facebook page, and it will take you, it will give you information and take you to the link to our website to get the tickets. Yes. And we want to see loads and loads of you.
Yes. So, like you said, twofatexpats.com and click on events and you will be able to purchase a ticket. Okay. We'll see you next week.